Hello everyone, and a warm welcome back to Ginger Gerald, you lucky bastard. It's great to have you back, and thanks to you all, and a few bribes to my nearest and dearest, it's extremely pleasing to see the number of people subscribing, following, downloading, and listening in to my weekly outpourings is in the ascendancy. But let's not stop there. Please ask your family and friends, your FB and Instagram contacts to do their bit and keep passing the pod. Just like the pass the parcel, but with an infinite number of people in the game. Thanks too for the feedback. I've had a surprising number of messages since my last broadcast saying thanks for the insight or that some story really resonated with you. Yes, I know exactly what you're talking about, Ginger Gerald. And of course, the odd one who said, well, this podcast's a pile of rubbish and I've just wasted 20 minutes of my life that I'll never get back. Well, you know what they say, you can't please them all. To those who are new to this podcast, hello, come on in. And as the podcast name suggests, I am Ginger Gerald and I'm here to give you the lowdown on the reality of moving and living overseas. If you've not done so already, you can have a quick listen into my trailer so you know what I'm likely to be rattling on about, when I'm not digressing, that is, and you can catch up on the last few episodes where we've explored a bunch of themes such as the decision to move overseas in the first place, the impact of the weather, always a good one, and we've had lovely chats about making friends, and we've even explored holidays. Today's episode, however, is a little bit different and it's called Taking the Plunge. Because we're going to get into the topic of swimming pools. Clever, eh? Taking the plunge. Swimming pools. Things have got off to a good start. I'm not referring to the public pool in your hometown or the lovely set of cascading pools at the hotel complex you stayed in last time you went on your jollies. No, I'm talking about the one in your own backyard. You know, your very own private pool for just you and your family. And your friends, if you've got any, or anyone you choose to invite to come along. Did you know that there are 250,000 private pools in the UK? I've never seen one in Stoke-on-Trent, mind. Well, in Spain, that same number is 1.1 million. And in the US, it's 10.4 million. So this swimming pool thing is a big thing. Now, for many people, having your own pool at your own house is the very definition of poshness. And if you go and broadcast that fact on a podcast to millions of listeners, millions? Who said millions? Then you're not just posh, but you're a complete twat. Well, if that's what any of you are thinking, or how you choose to define private pool owners, then I have to come clean from the outset, Ginger Gerald is a lucky bastard, as I do have a lovely pool at my current home. We use it for maybe 4 to 5 months of the year, plus a traditional plunge on Christmas Day, which gets its traditional post on Facebook and Instagram, and I stress about it for about 12 months of the year. It is usually a beautiful blue colour, and a photo of it wouldn't be out of place on the front cover of a glossy Mediterranean villas brochure, if they still exist. That is, of course, when it's not green, or full of soil, or sand, or leaves, or acorns, or even olives. Now, I'm aware that me talking about my own private pool might be a bit of a turn-off for some of you listeners. I can already hear some of you saying, that Ginger Gerald was all right, you know, one of us, a normal sort of a guy, but now he's going on about having his own pool in his own backyard. What a complete beep! So I know this is a bit of a dangerous subject for me to cover. However, for those of you who live overseas or have done, or maybe will do one day, or just like dreaming about it, which I think sums up my entire target audience for this podcast, then whether you rent a house or you buy a house, the pool or no pool debate is very real. And not just for the rhubarb gin and fever tree tonic brigade, is for normal people, like Ginger Gerald, over a couple of canyas. So let's get started. I'd like you all to answer this question honestly. If you are, have, or will be living overseas in a place where the climate is usually somewhat more suitable for using an outdoor pool than in the UK, for example, then how important, on a scale of 1 to 10, is having the use of your own pool, or at least of a shared pool? Would you pay just a little bit more than you budgeted to have one? Would you forego a bedroom, bathroom, or garage to make sure you had the use of a pool? Would you live in a two-man tent and do your daily ablutions in the woods as long as you had a pool? Well, I reckon the average of your answers will be a 7 or an 8. Many people wouldn't even consider having a property without a pool. So that gives them a 10 straight away. What's the point, they'd say, in going to live in a Cancun or a Mallorca and not having an outdoor pool? So I have to be honest and tell you that we, as a family, scored 10 for that very question when we defined our search criteria for the first house we rented in Cancun. We wanted, no. We needed a swimming pool. There it is. It's out there. Now, before I get on to the joys of private pool ownership, let's explore the pros and cons of the shared or community variety. Well, the very best thing, without a shadow of a doubt, about sharing a pool is that someone else is responsible for it. If it turns green, or the pump breaks, or a neighbour's kid does a number two in it, then that's not your problem. Well, it's not very pleasant if you're in the pool at the time and it's floating your way. But what I mean is, when there's an issue, there's someone else to look after it, and you can just sit around and moan that the pool is out of service for a while, the same as all your sharing pals. Of course, part of the maintenance fee you pay will of course be for the pool, but I believe that to be money well spent. Another huge benefit, of course, especially if you're a newcomer to overseas life, and even more so if you have kids, is that having a shared pool will help you to socialise and make friends. Many a dip together, which is often completely by chance, leads to a few beers together, or a full-on barbecue, or even a party. One day, first time I lived in Cancun, I've done a couple of stints in Cancun, me and my mate Ash were kicking a ball about, having had a quick dip in our communal pool. We were probably recovering from a hangover after a night out at the neighbouring nightclub La Boom, when a couple of lads and their dad came over and they said, "Can we join in?" "Sure," we said, "the more the merrier." And the game suddenly got a little bit more competitive. Well, it turned out that their dad was none other than Liverpool and Scotland international legend from the 80s, Steve Nicol. You see? Get yourself a communal pool and you too could be mixing with the elite of international sport. Anyway, when we arrived in Familia in Cancun, we absolutely loved our communal pool. It was exactly the right thing to do when we first got there. The pool was beautifully maintained by my mate Walberto. You see, I've got mates everywhere. And it was used by virtually all the neighbours and their kids. It was a safe place where everyone looked out for each other and where you got to know each other. Getting to know each other. That leads me on to some of the cons of having a shared pool. In any shared facility, there's always one person who doesn't think he has to pay anything. But he or she or they, of course, is the person who most uses the facility. And the worst thing is, you know he doesn't pay, which drives your own cost up. He's usually the one with the most money, drives around in the latest BMW sports car and treats the maintenance guy like he's a piece of poo on the bottom of his shoe. Oh, just to finish the image off, he's somewhat overweight but insists on wearing red Speedos. So I have a conundrum for you. That non-paying person is taking a dip as you head to the communal pool. What do you do? Do you A, go back into your house and wait for him to finish? Do you B, confront him and have a huge row in front of all of the neighbours? Or C, Ignore the issue completely and talk about the weather and the footy. You could, of course, take option D, D for drown him. Always an option, probably not the best one. And then there's next door, whose teenage kids invite their entire school round every weekend and take over the pool, drinking and smoking all over the place, and there's maybe a little bit of heavy petting behind the machine room. Oh, and with reggae on at top volume. And their parents are away, or they don't give a toss, or perhaps both. And don't forget the family opposite, who have a couple of huge and very scary-looking guard dogs, as they're hardly ever there. But those dogs are great at escaping, and they love a quick swim. So, lots of considerations before taking the plunge and going for a shared pool. It might or might not turn out to be the happy and easy solution you were looking for. The other option, and the most popular, of course, is that you have your very own pool. All of the cons I just highlighted for shared pools just float away like a fully inflated Lilo. So surely having your own pool has to be the very best option. What can possibly go wrong when the pool is all yours to use and to do with as you like and when you like? Well, the answer to that question is everything can go wrong, and at some point it definitely will. So imagine, I like these bits where you do the imagining. Imagine you turn up for your viewing to rent or buy a house, and the private pool will be immaculate. Of course it will. At the end of the day, the pool's a huge selling point for a house, and the estate agent will always focus on it. Oh, and if you want a pool but the house doesn't have one, and the estate agent tells you, don't worry, it's very easy to get planning permission and do it all yourself, then barge him out of the way as you sprint out of the house and don't come back. He's invariably talking complete and utter nonsense. Nowhere I have ever come across is it easy or quick to get permission and to build your own pool. Anyway, let's fast forward a bit. You view this house, okay, the pool's to die for, of course. You agree a price to buy or rent, and now it's moving in day. What's the very first thing you do? Yep, you've got it. You go to look at your brand new pool. Somehow, it's not quite how you remembered it from your visit. A little green, maybe. A bit smelly. You can't see the bottom of the pool. The water level is rather low. And why the hell are there electric wires coming out of the pool, wrapped round a couple of bricks on the side, and two great big holes where the underwater lights used to be? Welcome to Ginger Gerald's world. I didn't feel quite such a lucky bastard that day. Now, I think I can safely say that most of us know very little about swimming pool maintenance until we've got one of our own. And then, of course, we watch a couple of 5-minute YouTube videos and magically we become pool gurus. We suddenly know more than trained engineers and lifelong pool maintenance professionals. Why, oh why, would we even consider paying for someone with a lifetime of experience and training to come and repair our new-to-us pool that just a few weeks ago was perfect, award-winning even? Well, to be frank, I can't be doing with their tutting and I think everything is going to need changing speech. I've heard it so many times before. But here's the dilemma. Do I take the plunge, so to speak, and actually trust one of these experts who comes to inspect the damage and solve my problem? Or do I not trust them? And by trust, I mean that I need to believe that they're telling me the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. I need to be confident that they're defining what needs to be done and very clearly separating that out from what would be a nice thing to do. And that they're giving me a cost which is reasonable for the work required. Well, how the hell am I supposed to know whether to trust him or not when I'm absolutely clueless myself? When he was rabbiting on about pH level saltwater chlorinators and the benefits of glass versus sand filters, he might as well have been explaining how to land a drone on Mars. And I don't know so much about drones either. Or Mars, come to that. So, what did I do? Well, much to T's ongoing and partially justified frustration and annoyance, I didn't trust any of these professionals to begin with. I kept getting different people to come and diagnose the various problems and give me quotes for this and quotes for that. Occasionally, when I felt the pressure of the situation getting a little high, for example, the family would go out at the weekend and the pool was grey and filthy, then I'd feel I'd have to go with whatever solution and at whatever price I was given. But I hated it and I mumbled and I moaned about them non-stop. Not that I ever really knew if I was being ripped off or not, but the very thought that I might have been being played was enough to drive me mad. Being a stubborn and a slightly sad bastard, I did read a lot about pools and I did watch a lot, and I do mean a lot of videos, explaining how to solve everything that could possibly go wrong with my pool. Between you and me, I still do watch a lot of those videos. And after a year or two of being a pool owner, I felt I knew how things worked and I was pretty confident not just at maintaining the pool, and by that I mean the basics of checking your pH, checking your chlorine, setting the timers, vacuuming, emptying the leaves, emptying the debris out of the baskets, all that sort of thing. But importantly, and ridiculously, I also thought that I could diagnose a serious problem, define the appropriate solution, and then do it all on my own with no help from anyone. It took me a few disasters before I finally accepted my place on a low rung of the ladder of pool experts. One of my favourites was to spend hours and hours brushing and vacuuming the pool, making it look absolutely perfect, only to then pump all the crap straight back into the pool again. One job I decided I could do was very, very simple. There's a sensor. Okay, bear with me with the details. There's a sensor which measures the pH level in the water. When the pH reading gets too high, it triggers the automated acid dispenser to turn on to bring the pH back down to the level it's supposed to be. Well, this sensor had stopped working. It had clearly stopped working. It was giving the wrong readings or at times no readings at all. So all I had to do was buy another one, making sure it was exactly the same model, which I did online, perfect, saved a few bob as well. And then I just had to change it. I watched a few videos, of course, just to ensure nothing could go wrong. Easy peasy, I decided. I can still hear myself whistling away, happy as Larry, and safe in the knowledge that my newfound expertise was saving me an absolute fortune in service bills. Ginger Gerald, you are the swimming pool guru, you lucky and very knowledgeable bastard, I shouted to myself while beating my chest. Well, I forgot to close the water tap before I removed the sensor, so the pool water shot out of the hole where the sensor had been at huge pressure and soaked all the electronics for the entire pool management system, which were located very logically and handily directly above the sensor. The result of my handiwork? I was left with a €1,000 bill to replace the entire motherboard. I did consider suing YouTube until I realised that all of the videos did actually tell me to close the water tap first, but I skipped that bit. That, ladies and gentlemen, was not Ginger Gerald's finest day. Mind you, it's not just me who messes up. In one of our rented houses, pool maintenance was included in our rent. Maybe the owner had heard how rubbish I was and hadn't wanted his pool destroying. Anyway, for whatever reason, the pool maintenance guy was busy with his net picking out the leaves in the middle of a storm when a lightning bolt struck his metal pole and sent him flying into the nearby cactus plant. Now, I'm delighted to say he survived both the shock and the needles in his backside, but he was not in a good way for weeks. So word of warning, put your metal pole away when there's a storm around. It took me, I'd say, about 5 years of pool ownership before I finally trusted a swimming pool professional. The chap who comes now, he works for a little local shop. He's a new dad and I think he's great. But I still watch him like a hawk to see what he's doing and why he's doing it. And I pepper him with questions to make sure I do it myself next time. So let's have a quick recap of your options when it comes to taking the plunge. Firstly, are you a we must have a pool sort of a person or sort of a family or not? If you are, then what do you go for? The communal version, no work or responsibility, remember, but your neighbours or their dogs may get on your nerves, or they may even cramp your style, depending what you have in mind to do in the pool. Or do you go for your very own pool? And if you do have your own, do you get someone in who really knows about pools and just let them get on with all the maintenance work and you pay them nicely every month? Or do you become, or pretend to become in my case, a pool expert from the start? You can save a bunch of money, but you do risk some very major and expensive mistakes. First world problems, you may say, and you may well be right. But pools overseas are a must, and they're a great topic for conversation. So that's it for today, folks. I've loved talking about swimming pools and even admitting to some of my shortfalls when it comes to trying to look after them myself. It almost feels a little therapeutic. Something else I've become an expert at, by the way, is gardening. Oh yes, I may never have taken the slightest interest in gardening for the vast majority of my life, but suddenly I've got my own garden and the opportunity to become fruit, veg and herb self-sufficient. Then I become your resident Alan Titchmarsh. And just a teaser, my melons have made the front page of the local press, I'll have you know. I'll be telling you all about Ginger Gerald's green fingers in a week or two. But next week, in response to huge public demand, we're going to talk about the importance, or not, of speaking the language of the country you've moved to. Do you need to be fully bilingual to get by? Are hand signals good enough? Or is it okay to speak very slowly and loudly in English, wherever you go, and expect everyone to understand the universal language? Or should you spend all your spare time studying verb conjugations and agreeing your adjectives? An interesting topic and maybe one that's a little divisive. Anyway, I'm looking forward to it already. Just before I go, please do me a huge favour and try to find and click on that little button that says subscribe or follow on whichever platform you're using. That way I know that all Ginger Gerald's hard work, creativity and energy is delivered right to your virtual front door free of charge whenever I publish a new episode without you having to go looking for it each time. Thanks for listening in again to Ginger Gerald, you lucky bastard. And I look forward to speaking to you again very soon. Bye.
Thank you, Ginger Gerald, for enriching our lives.